And thank you for listening to the Conserve Yourself podcast. This program is a summary of current events from a conservative perspective. We're here not to create an alternative to the leftist beliefs that are sweeping this country and world, but to discuss our long existing conservative principles and how we can apply those principles to the heart of a story or an event. I want to help you as a conservative to think deeper on what's happening around us, as well as letting you know that you are not alone in your conservative beliefs. So we're 1 week away. Are you ready? Are you ready for it? We're like 4 years in the making at this point. So on November 3rd, 2020, American citizens across this great nation will come together to vote on a new president. Or will we? With the COVID-19 pandemic, most, if not all, states have extended the offering of mail-in ballots and absentee ballots for this election. And in a kind of a historic act, could Americans for the first time vote from home more than they're voting from the polling station? So let's jump right into our conservative principle of the day. Today's conservative principle is that we hold political voting as a civic right and duty. This is the great American experiment. At its core, it is created for the people, by the people. So here's a quick general summary of the details regarding our voting system, at least the system that we're using to elect a new president. And so we start with two separate types of votes that take place on election day. The first is the popular vote. This is a count of every vote in a state for one candidate or another. And at the end of the count, one candidate wins the vote. And this is really only applicable at the state level. So the popular vote, winner takes all, whoever gets the most votes wins. A candidate that wins the popular vote for a state is then given the electoral votes for that state. And electoral votes are graded by the population of a state. Small states are given fewer electoral votes, and larger, more populous states are given more electoral votes. For instance, in the 2020 election, there are 8 states, such as Vermont and Alaska, that have the lowest number of 3 electoral votes. The most populous state of California is given 55 votes. And this is actually more votes than all of the states surrounding California combined. These electoral numbers are reevaluated every 10 years with each decade's national census data. And when that data is updated, the electoral votes are then recalculated. So there are a total of 538 electoral votes. And for a presidential candidate to win, they must have 270 votes once the election is over. In all but 2 states, Maine and Nebraska, the electoral votes are awarded as winner-take-all, meaning that if a candidate wins the popular vote in that state, they win it all. They get all the electoral votes for that state. Now, in those 2 states, in Maine and Nebraska, it's split up. The winner of the popular vote is actually given 2 electoral votes, and then the state is divided into districts in which the popular vote for those districts are given additional electoral votes. Maine has 2 districts, a total of 4 electoral votes, 2 to the state's popular vote, and then 1 for each of the popular votes of the 2 districts, and Nebraska has 3 districts. Now, many people wonder why such a strange election process. And this is a process that makes America a democratic republic instead of a pure democracy. A pure democracy would just basically count on the popular vote, whereas this democratic republic, the popular vote of states then give an additional vote by representatives or electoral votes to the president after that. The founders realized that the power of cities and areas of dense population could rule and drown out the rest of the country by becoming larger and larger, more dense and dense. They realized that those population centers could make decisions for the entire country without the entire country would lose its voice. So by moving to an electoral college, that average was flattened in such a way that smaller states still had a say in who became president without totally neglecting that the population in these population centers should still have a larger voice. This idea is also seen in the makeup of our legislative branch. Each state is given a House seat based on the population of that state, whereas the Senate is made up of two seats per state, no matter what the state's population. Again, more of this population-based check and balances. The Founding Fathers were very aware of the idea of what has been described as mob rule, and worked in provisions to protect American politics from such occurrences. Now, never has this process been questioned more than that of the 2016 presidential election. In that election, Hillary Clinton did win the overall popular vote with 65.8 million votes compared to Donald Trump's 62.9 million votes. So 3 million votes more went to Clinton over Trump. But Clinton's popularity was confined only to the most populous states, California, New York, and the West Coast and New England, whereas Trump carried the popular vote in 30 other states, mostly Midwest and Southern states. And in the end, Trump won the Electoral College with 304 electoral votes compared to Clinton's 227. And it was actually a very decisive win. It wasn't close when the Electoral College was over. Now, the closest election in modern history was that of the 2000 election between George W. Bush and Al Gore. In that election, Gore narrowly received the popular vote of 50,000,009 compared to 50,000,004. So 500,000 votes in the popular vote went to Gore. But just like the 2016 election, Bush won the Electoral College because he won most of the states. Gore did win some of the northern states like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and these were states that were won by Trump in 2016. And because Gore won a few more states, Bush only narrowly won the Electoral College with 271 votes compared to Gore's 266. This is one vote more, only one vote more than what Bush needed to win the election. Now, only three times has the popular vote candidate not won the Electoral College. The first and the oldest being Grover Cleveland in 1888. And it would be over 100 years later in 2000 when George Bush would win. And then a short 16 years later, when Donald Trump would win. Now let's fast forward to 2020. Historically, the voter turnout has ranged anywhere from 50 to 60% of eligible voters. In the last 20 years, this peaked in 2008 with 57% of eligible voters going out to vote. And the lowest was actually in 2000 in that highly contested race between Bush and Gore when only 50% of voters turned out. The highest since these details records have been kept in since 1932, according to Wikipedia, was in 1960, in which almost 63% of eligible voters turned up at the polls. So if we're going to look at 2020, this year might change in that percentage. And why do we say that? So if there's a good chance that you've been on social media over at least the last couple months, but really over the last several months, as you've signed into your favorite social media platform, you've probably been assaulted with messages and pop-ups to be sure to register to vote and now to be sure to vote. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, and a bunch of others have really been pushing the very specific message, get out and vote. Now, initially, these platforms were creating very handy tools to get people registered to vote if they hadn't yet. And now that the registration's over and the vote is in full swing, they're pushing hard to get people out and vote. And as a conservative, we absolutely have to agree with this. If you are eligible, get out and vote. It's your civic right and duty to get out and vote. But here's where we can think a little bit deeper and take some observations as we look at what's happening. So why? Why are these platforms pushing so hard for people to get out and vote? Let's take a quick look at who runs these companies and what might be some political bent that might be behind this push. So let's first look at Facebook. In 2016, Facebook was accused of being the platform of choice to sway the vote one way or another. The term fake news came about around this time of fake stories and fake websites pushing information to somehow sway people in the way they thought. Now, ignoring that argument for a moment, how do we think that Facebook itself leans politically? So according to some websites, and again, we have to kind of sometimes take these statistics with a grain of salt and just understand, but according to one website, govprecinct.com, they analyzed contributions to political campaigns from employees at certain companies. And Facebook employees over the last two presidential election cycles, that's 2016, and so far in 2020, have out-donated to Democratic candidates 20-1 compared to employees contributing to Republican candidates. So when we see Facebook pushing people almost daily, all the time, to get out and vote, we also have to realize that the company that's deciding to do that is a company that 20-1 or supposedly 20-1 donates to Democratic candidates. Switching to Twitter, it's a little bit more cut and dry here. We don't really have to kind of wonder one way or another. Jack Dorsey has stated back in 2016 that he was going to work hard to get people to vote prior to the election. And in 2016, it was about the only site, though Facebook did this some too, where they pushed the same message to get out and vote. And he tweeted back then that we cannot let this be the first presidential election, 2016, in 50 years without full protections for voters of color. Now, he didn't really back up what he meant by that, and it is a confusing statement in itself, but we can see back in 2016, he already had these ideas that somehow there weren't protections for voters, and that he would utilize Twitter and his other companies to help provide those protections. Now, we don't know what that meant. And we think that Jack Dorsey has an idea of what he means by that, though he hasn't been super straightforward about that. In 2016, many believed that the candid tweets from the presidential candidate Trump allowed him to communicate directly to voters in a way that hadn't been seen before. And really, Trump has been known, has been somewhat connected, his persona has been somewhat connected to his Twitter account, both pluses and minuses. As conservatives, we many times shake our heads at some of the things that Donald Trump posts on Twitter. Many of us think that he should just have Twitter just pulled away. Now Dorsey had a couple of interesting quotes after the 2016 election, and he tried to distance the activities that Twitter was doing, or the platform that it gave the then President Trump for communicating with his constituents, by saying, quote, "America's responsible for Donald Trump being president." Dorsey was also quoted as saying, "We need to spend more time thinking about what problems we actually want to solve and how we're going to solve them." And when he was asked to kind of reiterate or kind of expound on that a little bit, he just replied with, "It's complicated." Now, let's fast forward 4 years, and we can see that Twitter is very active in this presidential election. It's not so much that they're just providing a platform, but they have implemented multiple initiatives to regulate in their mind how information is flowing about this election. Twitter has been hotly scolded by both sides, interestingly, for its activities in this election. Many times leading up to the election, Twitter has fact-checked, hidden, or even suspended accounts connected to the Trump campaign. And from what I can see, I can't really even find any evidence that this has happened at all to the Biden campaign. And in a recent bombshell New York Post story that was discussing and talking about foreign dealings involving Hunter and Joe Biden, Twitter actually went on the initiative and actively blocked and suspended accounts for simply sharing this New York Post story. And this has led many to believe that Twitter is not only just assisting in getting out the vote, but they're actively helping the Biden campaign. YouTube, if we switch to YouTube, has had a couple of rough years, and they've had a couple of, and I think that they've got some legal fights on their hands in the wake of some of the stories that have come out about them. In the wake of new media, many conservative pundits and political activists have found a new platform to communicate to a large audience on the YouTube platform. And YouTube, in a move that many believe is a pushback against conservative content on their platform, began demonetizing, suspending, and hiding those conservative voices from their search results. At the same time, YouTube began partnering and premiering their own content that had a very definitive liberal and left-leaning political commentators on it. So do we think that these social media companies want everyone to get out and vote. Imagine you are a new voter and you register through one of these sites. They know that. They know that you clicked on that registration button and they realize that you are looking for guidance from the influencers on those sites to figure out who to vote for, where to get your information from. But if you're the social media company, how do you use that information to your advantage? Maybe you hide the voices that go against your desired choice. Maybe you discredit and fact check those on the opposite side. Maybe you throw as many suggestions at that new registered person as you can in an attempt to get them to follow those people on your right side of history. I invite you to head over actually to the Conserve Yourself YouTube and Facebook page where I've detailed an interesting experience regarding the suggested Twitter users that I was given when I first set up the Conserve Yourself Twitter account. At first, when setting up a Twitter account, Twitter asks you about some general categories that you're interested in. Because of the nature of this podcast, I chose politics, history, U.S. national news, and social issues. Now, what you might imagine is that you would get a wide variety of popular Twitter accounts that are related to those categories. From left side or right side, just a variety of voices, right? But what Twitter suggested for the accounts and the people that I should follow were 90% progressive leftist accounts and nowhere to be seen on the entire list that was provided. Dozens of accounts that were suggested was our current President Donald Trump's account. That account that is probably the most scrutinized, most read, most popular, to use, you know, a term not necessarily good popular, bad popular, but one of the most popular Twitter accounts on the entire platform. It was not suggested, even though I chose both politics, history, U.S. national news, and social issues. And I would say his particular account probably fills them all. Instead, in the top four, you have Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's site. Then you have Michelle Obama, and you would have Clinton, and you have Bernie Sanders, and on, it almost took 30 suggestions before a single conservative political account was suggested. Only two Trumps were in that list, Eric Trump and Melania Trump. And so 90% of all of the suggestions, dozens of suggestions, 90% of them were progressive leftist accounts. And so that leaves you thinking, right? Left me thinking. So as conservatives, as a principle, we will absolutely say, go out and vote. But at the same time, we can't be ignorant to think that there isn't some sort of agenda behind this big social media push to get out and vote. We know they have an agenda. We know that their agenda is to get the people out to vote for who they want to vote for, but we only hope that they will succeed in getting out the vote, and that vote will choose the conservative side. Well, that concludes this podcast. I want to thank you for joining me today. We plan to release a new podcast every Tuesday and Friday morning. I look forward to encouraging you and reminding you that you are not alone in your conservative worldview. So until next time, always remember to conserve yourself.